Welcome to this episode, which is actually our 50th episode of Physicians Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Rachel Giles from Medicom Medical Publishers, in collaboration with Physicians Weekly.
Welcome to Physicians Weekly.
Today's episode takes an in-depth look at osteoarthritis, a condition that affects more than 32 million adults in the United States alone. Also known as wear and tear arthritis, it's been in the news lately because despite being the most frequent reason for activity limitation in adults, one new study has recently shown that walking can ward off knee pain for people with osteoarthritis. Education, exercise, and weight loss are the cornerstones of management, complemented by non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs for patients who are candidates, corticosteroid injections where necessary, and several adjunctive medicines. For persons with advanced symptoms and structural damage, of course, total joint replacement can effectively relieve pain. Later in this episode, Physicians Weekly's Dr. Marta Kelly interviews Dr. Eva Rose from the University of Southern Denmark in Odense. She recently published a paper looking at exercise therapy and how it was effective in improving muscle strength. She said these results made her
have to rethink the way that I have been thinking as a clinician.
The Physicians Weekly podcast provides thought leader insights on the latest medical news, clinical trial coverage, and advances in medicine and healthcare.
But first, I interview Dr. Philip Connigan from the Leeds Institute of Rheumatic and Musculoskeletal Medicine from the University of Leeds in the UK to define meaningful within-patient change in the Western Ontario and McMaster University's Osteoarthritic Index, better known as WOMAC. His team analyzed data from three different phase 3 clinical trials of tanezumab, a novel treatment intended for the relief of signs and symptoms of moderate to severe osteoarthritis, administered subcutaneously every 8 weeks. Patients with moderate to severe osteoarthritis of the hip and knee completed the WOMAC and patient global assessment of osteoarthritis at regular time points, and he talks about that study. Enjoy listening. So much for joining us.
So my name's Philip Connigan. I'm a rheumatologist from Leeds in the UK. I want to talk to you about our recent paper looking at meaningful within patient change concerning the WOMAC instrument and related to a very common disease, osteoarthritis of the hip or knee. Now, for anybody who sees patients, you'll know that osteoarthritis is incredibly common and that we don't have many therapies at all. And those number of therapies are actually probably shrinking over the years with recent data suggesting that acetaminophen or paracetamol and opioids may not be that effective in people with osteoarthritis pain. So what's really important in this field is that we focus on optimizing our trial designs so we can tell if a therapy works or not. One of the commonest tools used for this area is called the WOMAC, the Western Ontario and McMaster University's Osteoarthritis Index. It's a patient-reported outcome, 24 questions with 5 on pain, 2 on stiffness, and 17 on function. But mostly in osteoarthritis trials, we care about pain. So the WOMAC pain would be the commonest tool used for osteoarthritis trials. Now, trials also generally give us the result of two groups. So they say treatment A works better in this group than in that group. And that means using group level statistics. What we need to understand is what's a meaningful change at the individual patient level. So that means looking at within patient change. Now, in our paper, what we're able to do is look at large patient numbers from a series of trials involving a potential therapy for osteoarthritis, one that isn't licensed, called tanezumab, which is a monoclonal antibody to nerve growth factor. And with that large data set from a few trials, we're able to look at how changes in WOMAC pain related to change in a patient global assessment of osteoarthritis. So that's where you ask a patient whether, in taking everything into account, how does my osteoarthritis affect me? So patient global is used in many disease areas. So we compared change in the WOMAC pain and change in patient global. And we found that the relationships were very consistent between these. There was a linear relationship between the changes in the WOMAC domains and changes in patient global. And we were able to estimate the amount of change that we could see with these tools and come up with a meaningful amount of change for the WOMAC at the individual patient level. And this has established what can be used in trials in the future to understand a meaningful within patient change at patient level rather than at group level. This is more about the methodology of the tools and validating important cut points for tools when used in clinical trials. So we have some understanding of what might be a between group difference, and now we have some understanding of individual patient differences that are meaningful based on comparing a common tool with a common anchor.
That's really cool. And so looking forward, how can you incorporate these sort of methodologies into future trials and into future research questions?
So I think future trials will now have more confidence and be able to have outcome measures that say we looked at between group difference and we looked at people achieving this much change at individual patient level that we know is meaningful and clinically important. So that's the major impact for future OA trials.
Okay, and I have one perhaps fairly naive question. Are there characteristic differences between knee and hip osteoarthritis?
Knee and hip osteoarthritis have some similarities and some differences. We use the same pain tools, and generally to get into an osteoarthritis trial, you'd have to have chronic pain of both in either joint to get into a trial. What's interesting is the trajectories over time are likely a bit different with knees and hips, in that hips seem to cope all right for some time clinically and then get worse, probably to do with shape change in the femoral head, and then they need joint replacement, whereas knees can go on for many, many years without requiring joint replacement and have probably more chronicity. And in trials, the trials normally include more knees than hips, generally for that reason.
Thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Thanks, Rachel. Good luck.
Hello. I'm here with Dr. Eva Amroos, who is professor of musculoskeletal function and physiotherapy at the Department of Sports Science and Clinical Biomechanics, Faculty of Health at the University of Southern Denmark. She is going to be discussing knee and hip osteoarthritis are more alike than different in baseline characteristics and outcomes. This was published recently in Osteoarthritis and Cartilage. Good day. How are you?
Hi. Nice to meet with you, Marta.
What makes this topic an important one to study? What needs existed for your research?
Well, you see, I've been working in the clinic for nearly 20 years, and you have your perceived notions about different groups of patients. And I would think there are some differences between patients who present with knee osteoarthritis and those who present with hip osteoarthritis. But in research studies, we often lump these together. So you would lump patients with hip and knee osteoarthritis together in one cohort and study it. And we were actually curious if there were some myths that we could bust that clinicians have, or if I take on my researcher hat, I was actually interested if we should continue to lump these patients together or if we should study them and present the results separately.
Can you briefly explain what you and your colleagues set out to determine with the study and how you went about doing so, how it was conducted?
Yeah, so we have access to a database called the GLAD database. And the problem with osteoarthritis is that there has been very few databases or very little data available on patients prior to having a total joint replacement. And as you know, that is a treatment that you get when you have severe osteoarthritis. And we were interested in those who present earlier in primary care and who are treated with first-line treatment. And that is, in most countries, patient education and exercise therapy. So we had access to this database and we thought, We should take a look at what it really looks like when we compare patients who present with either hip or knee osteoarthritis as their primary problem.
What findings from your study are important to stress to our physician readers, particularly rheumatologists?
So I think what was really interesting with this study was that I have to rethink the way that I have been thinking as a clinician, because as a clinician, there are some obvious things. I would think that patients with knee osteoarthritis are more obese, and indeed they are. While a third with knee osteoarthritis were obese, it was only a quarter of those with hip osteoarthritis as a primary complaint. So that was correct, my understanding as a clinician. But what was really interesting to me was that despite these differences we can see at baseline, patients actually had the same amount of pain when they came and saw the clinician. And they also improved to the same degree. So it doesn't really matter if you have hip or knee osteoarthritis. If you are treated with the exercise therapy and patient education, you have the same improvement. And I think that was a real eye-opener to me as a clinician, because I would think that patients with knee osteoarthritis have a greater capacity to improve from these treatments because there are more and larger muscles around the knee that exercise therapy can help stabilize the joint compared to the hip joint.
Well, what are the implications of your research? How would you like to see physicians, again, particularly rheumatologists, incorporate their findings into their practices?
Yeah, so we can see that patients who typically join the type of program that I mentioned, treatment programs that include patient education and exercise therapy, 75% have knee osteoarthritis as a primary complaint. And I would like to see rheumatologists and physicians in general to refer more patients with hip osteoarthritis to these programs because they can expect similar improvements.
And finally, what would you like to see future research focus on in the area? What needs still exist?
I think the big mystery is why we underutilize this treatment for both patients with hip and knee osteoarthritis. We have had the evidence for many years now, and it is part of clinical guidelines, I dare say, in all Western countries around the world, that we should start with patient education and weight control if needed and exercise therapy. And it is a mystery why we underutilize it. It's still too common that patients have surgery to their joints without ever having tried exercise therapy. And when we compare exercise therapy as a treatment to pharmacological painkillers, we can see that they are at least as effective as NSAIDs, and they are more effective than paracetamol, for example, but without the side effects. Actually, the side effects from exercise therapy are just positive. It will affect also your general health, and it will help improve your other comorbidities that you may have, such as cardiovascular disease or diabetes or something else. But a very common question that I've had from patients is that, well, isn't this bad for my knee because it's painful and it hurts, you know? Isn't it dangerous? So we've spent some time to look into that, and what we can see is that you will have the pain relief, and we have studied if it is dangerous for the cartilage, and it's not. Actually, we can find that exercise therapy relieves pain, but it's not harmful for your joints. So patients can feel safe that they can exercise without harming their joints. And I think this is a very important message for rheumatologists to provide to their patients.
Thank you. This was very informative.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today's podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Physicians Weekly is produced in collaboration with Medicom Medical Publishers and Physicians Weekly.